For this episode, we want to give a shout out to Ben with Creefell Bagel Company. Creefell Bagel Company is boiling and baking fresh sourdough bagels every morning. They're located in Creefell at 4825 Trousdale Drive, Suite 228. Go check them out. Welcome to another episode of Nashville Dads. This week, we have on Brad Stinson of The Collective Global. Brad's company specializes in teaching emotional intelligence to companies. So we end up talking about therapy, processing your life, finding safe spaces and friends to process life with, the importance of unplugging, and how caring for yourself helps your family life. This episode feels like one really big therapy session, and it was a lot of fun, and I hope you guys enjoy it. Justin, do you want to kick it off?
Yeah. So, Brad, just tell us a little bit about yourself. How many kids do you have, and what do you do for a living?
Yeah. So, I'll start with the family. Yes, I've been actually this coming year, I've been married to my wife 20 years. So, like, we're in that year.
Congrats.
It's awesome. So, she's kept me around this long for as much as I've done and as much as I've tried to be an entrepreneur, you know, over the last 10 years. So, she's the saint. Mm-hmm. I'm the crazy one. And then I have three boys. So Caleb, who's 16, Grayson, who's 14, and Will, who's 11. All wow. different, all like their own things, you know, and super proud of them, where they're at. It's just crazy. You blink, and it's like Caleb's, I only got 2 years left with him.
Yeah.
So it's like, poof, you know. So I remember when they were like rolling around on the ground, and you blink, and they're old. So.
Yeah.
It's nuts. So, yeah, that's a little bit of family. We got two dogs, two French bulldogs.
Nice.
And Gus and Gwen, they are part of the family.
Yes.
You know, they'll get mad if I don't mention them.
Of course.
So, I run a consulting business that deals predominantly really in kind of emotional intelligence. You know, so there's a lot of consulting firms out there that help you build strategy and structure and processes, which are all important, but humans have to do those. Mm-hmm. And so with us, it's like we have to really make sure that a lot of times when you want to become a bad team become good team become great team become influential, whatever that looks like, there's usually an emotional intelligence and emotions that are tied to those things, you know. And so we deal in that space. We've spent a lot of time studying that space. One of my mentors says, you know, emotions are a little bit different. They're kind of like going to the gym. Like we all have them. Mm-hmm. And so basically it's kind of, you can't just know it to get it. You have to do it to have it. So mm-hmm. what does that mean? So we actually practice every single week. We're all in groups, and you know, we really practice what emotional intelligence looks like with kind of on the therapy side and that piece, and then also some other ways just to be able to really, when we go into rooms, like I met a guy here right before this, and he's headed off to Idaho tomorrow to work with a client. And,
oh, cool.
You know, there's a lot going on there and a lot more around the emotional side of it than there is, honestly, you know, the just building a better team and structure and processes and stuff. So we do with that. I think that's a big thing that differentiates us. And then, you know, I was in corporate America, you know, for about 15 years. And so I saw this gap in a lot of like leadership and team development is this growth and more make you, you know, work smarter, work better together and all that. And there's this leader kind of team develop, but then the human development wasn't right there. It's like, hey, do all this stuff here, but there's nothing that I can actually take home. Mm-hmm. So all the stuff that we create, I say you can use at the conference room table and the dinner table.
Oh, cool.
So it can be used across because, you know, if you can be a better dad or a husband, you know, you can also be a better, you know, leader and teammate.
Yeah.
So why don't we create things that when I'm done with the conversation about work, I go, and this is how you use it at home. And that way you can be a help because language is so important. You can't have a language at home and a language at work. It's like, what if you could have one where it kind of transcends both?
Yeah.
So that's us. So like kind of the more emotional intelligence side, creating stuff that really moves it to home because I care about that more from my own story. And then, you know, I think that, you know, we are in a bunch of different industries doing a whole bunch of different work, but our work is really with the humans, you know, so like that's it. So that's a little bit about us, a little bit about our firm, you know, a little bit about family.
It's just in a whole array of different CEOs, CFOs from all different backgrounds, all different
All different industries. We're in 20-plus different industries. We work with nonprofit leaders to CEOs to professional athletes to professional sports coaches. Like, we work with therapists. It's all across the board.
Oh, cool. Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Is it directly just here in Nashville, or is it throughout the United States?
Yeah, so, like, I just got a call from one of my clients last week, and he's like, can you be in Germany at the end of the month? So,
oh,
like,
wow.
It's all over, you know, but, cool. You know, a lot of it's in America for the most part, but we do deal, you know, in all different, we've kind of gone around the world, you know, in some of those respects, whether cool. It's virtual or in person. So,
in that group, is that the collective group? Is that what it's
collective
called?
Collective Global.
Sorry, buddy.
Yeah. That's
how long have you, how long has that been a company for?
So, 8 years.
8 years? Cool.
Yeah. And so, before that, I was in corporate America. And that probably been doing the work inside corporate America for about five of kind of my own work, doing my own thing. And I was like, hey, this needs to live outside.
Yeah.
Got an opportunity to do that. And so really the work has been tried, true, and tested for about 13 years.
Cool.
And then, as you know, you just refine it and change it and add things to it. And, you know, it's all experiential. So you have to be able to get to understanding not only what the client needs in this case, it's more like what the human needs. And so I had to go on my own journey along with my teammates to be able to actually be able to kind of work almost harder clients, you know, and things that they deal with that nobody can fix them, or we're at a good team, but we've never been able to be great.
Yeah.
We don't just work with like teams that are falling apart. You know, how do we become, you know, great? And there's usually the things that we talked about keeping them from that. So
that's
about 8 years. Cool. But the work's been about 13.
Cool. Well, I feel like that like line of thinking of actually focusing on emotional intelligence, I feel like I didn't even know that existed until like 10 or 15 years ago.
Yeah.
Or like getting out of college and people being like, by the way, here's how to be more emotionally intelligent. And I'm like, you mean nice and kind to people?
Is that yes. What you mean? Yes, yes.
So that's really cool that you can build a whole company around that of like, hey, let's go talk to the people who are making decisions for companies and be like, hey, there's a human aspect to this. Let's talk about it.
Because you don't learn that in school necessarily.
No.
Oh, high school or in college. I didn't learn any of that in college
at all. You take like one business ethics class, which gives you the most ridiculous scenarios possible. Yes. Like, how are you a good person in this scenario? And you're like, don't do what that guy just did.
Yeah.
The fascinating part about the work is that actually we're all born with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, you know, I know you guys on this podcast talk about, and there's a lot of guys that come on here that have younger kids.
Yeah.
Like, I use the example, like, when a kid has a little ice cream, right, and the two-year-old, right, and then for some reason it falls out and on the ground, what happens to them?
They scream.
Yeah.
Because their life is over, because that was the most important thing to them in the world was that ice cream.
Yeah.
Well, that's emotion. You know, and they're just, they don't have, you know, when your kids come home and they just put their hands up to you, they're just glad to see you.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they don't even know what to do with their bodies. They're like running around and they're just like, what we like to say is we're not teaching you anything new. We're just reminding you have them.
Yeah.
And that it's safe to have them. Mm-hmm. There's boundaries around them. There's people who are safe and there's people who are not safe.
Yeah.
And then how do you actually have in the working world, you know, and even in your friend groups, like, how do you even do that? I would say to your point on the 10 to 15 years is that really this field is only about 25 years old.
Okay.
Like, you know, you have your Brene Browns and like your Susan Davids and just people in that world, even Adam Grant's kind of getting into that space. Mm-hmm. I love him. They're just kind of the ones that are like kind of charging and like they're out there in front of everybody kind of speaking. I'm like, keep going. Like, yes. This is awesome. And the thing about emotional intelligence is, like I said earlier, you have to practice it over and over and over. So like I'm in groups every week practicing it, understanding what it means. It's not like I can just figure it out. I can read a book and know it. It's like that doesn't exist in emotions because we're just different type of creatures. And, you know, to your point, you get, as you grow older, we're taught to manage the room that we're in.
Mm-hmm.
We're taught to, you know, maybe have emotions, not, oh, you're safe, you're not safe, you know, and this could be inside your household, you know, seriously, with your parents. Like, there's some, and just, oh, if I do that, then that, oh, my dad does that, and my mom does that. So, like, you know, we learn to actually not have emotion.
Yeah.
Which is why when we kind of come out of it, even in college, it's like, what do we, wait, I have to go back out into this world to work with other people, you know, and they have emotions and not, and how do they, and they have a past to where was emotion safe or not safe in there.
Yeah.
So we have to really start to, we peel that back very slowly and very carefully because it can be very damaging and hard for people, but it can be very like freeing for people.
Yeah.
And what we just say is it's in all of us. You just got to have a way to kind of walk yourself out of it.
I think
yeah, into it. Excuse me.
I'm a really big Richard Rohr fan, like the Franciscan monk, and he's very big on like the whole concept of like, you have a defense mechanism you create as a child, and then because something hurt you, basically, so then you defend a wall, you put a wall up against it, and then here you are in your 30s and like 40s, and you're like, I still have these walls up. Why? Because something hurt me whenever I was 5, and I've never acknowledged or addressed it at all, and I'm not letting people into my life because of something that happened to me 25 years ago that I didn't know how to process.
Yep. 100%.
Yep.
I speak to leaders all the time who lead other leaders, and then I get to kind of know their backstory because we do this thing called backstory where we share about our past in a safe way. It's not too deep.
Yeah.
And then I'll get to know them, and I'll be talking to a leader who's leading this leader, and they'll be like, yeah, I just can't get into like this ceiling. I go, because you're talking to 12-year-old Brad.
Yeah.
Like, he hasn't gone back and processed what's there, and when he gets any point of when it triggers him, you're not talking to a 35-year-old man. Mm-mm. You're talking to a 12-year-old man, boy.
Yeah.
And until he goes back there, you're like, oh, he's got great potential, and he can go to this. And I'm like, not until he goes there.
Yeah.
Because he'll get in rooms where he's triggered. He'll get in rooms that aren't safe, and this is how he will react. And until he goes back there and actually with a professional and does that work, which I've done, and it's super hard. It's terrifying. It's enlightening. It's scary. It's sad. There's like all the emotions I can talk about. But like once you go there, you can actually then like there's times where I'm like I dealt with some stuff and I was 12-year-old talking to my mentor who led me through it, and then I became 24 kind of after kind of doing some work with him. I'm like, okay, I'm still not 43.
Yeah.
But I'm not 12 anymore.
Yeah.
You know, and I've moved myself to this because there was so much more life between 24 and 43. That are still triggering.
Yeah.
And so when you deal in these spaces, it's like there's also limiting things that have nothing to do with the people you live life with, work with, because it's their own story that is keeping them, you know, from engaging with you or growing or learning.
So. Is it cognitive behavioral therapy is kind of what you do?
Yeah. Some of it. I mean, I'm not a therapist by any means.
I've read a ton of books that talk to therapists more than a therapist. Yes.
So I have a bunch of, you know, mentors around me that are in that space, and I lean on them a lot. But I've done, I would say this, you know, like I've done a lot of my work, you know, but my mentors have done their work. They're 62 and 74.
Yeah.
Like, those are my two guys. And, like, I tell anybody, if you're going to work with a therapist, and you're going to work with a coach, and you're going to try to better yourself, ask them who they work with. If they don't have anybody they work with, run.
Okay.
Because you have to always be getting better.
Yeah.
Until you're in your 60s or 70s. My funny thing is like, one of the 62-year-olds still has people he goes to.
Yeah.
And it's like, if they think you have it solved,
oh, no.
Then I'm like, I'm out. Like,
just like anybody that says they have parenting solved. No. You're lying. You're lying to yourself.
Well, I mean,
the scariest, most important job on earth.
I have three kids. They're 8, 6, and 2. And I remember all of the comfort techniques we created for the first child. The second child hated every single one of them.
Yeah.
And in that moment, your ego is just like immediately destroyed of like, but wait a second. The other kid wanted to be swaddled, dark room, white noise, all of that. What's your second kid like? Just put them down. They don't want to be touched anymore. And you're like, oh, I feel kind of inadequate.
So true.
What do I do with this?
Yep. So true. Yeah. I love like all my kids are different. I repeatedly sat down with my oldest and said, hey, this is my first time being a dad. I'm going to mess up a lot.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to try to get some things right. I'm going to figure it out along the way. I'm going to have to apologize to you.
Yeah.
Because even though I had a great dad, and good grandfathers, it's like it's still they still have wounds and they still have wounds, mm-hmm. which I'm still trying to also work through.
Yeah.
And I said that, you know, my own work is going to unfortunately, you know, harm you in places, going to hurt you in places. It just will happen.
Yeah.
But if we can come back together and you can share with me and I can share with you, I think that will be okay. And he's, you know, he's more of a quiet, he's super creative. Like he makes his own beats and music. Like he's
cool.
And good town to be it.
Yeah.
Be it in. Right. And so he's so creative, so intelligent. My middle one is Tasmanian devil. Just crazy.
Athlete.
Yeah. Just like, I think a lot of them are, you know, entrepreneur, spirit and heart. Like he's probably started 5 businesses.
Really?
Like
cool.
Never finished any of them, but started 5 businesses.
So an entrepreneur.
Yes, exactly. And then my youngest is a comedian, soft spoken, loves real hard, cares about, but they're all different. And you're like, that didn't work with that. And you know, my wife's, you know, she's the piece in the house and stuff like that. So, like, the older one and the younger one are really kind of like her. The middle one's kind of like me. So there's this little, like, back and forth all the time. And I'm like, well, I need to learn from them and learn from them. So, but no, it's definitely, you know, it's the most important job, yet the scariest job on earth.
Yeah. One thing that I heard you say that I've heard many other dads say is saying, I'm sorry.
Yeah. So important.
And that I'm going to mess up. That mm-hmm. is something that I've heard almost from every single dad that we've had so far,
yeah.
which is really enlightening. And knowing that it comes, it's really hard. It comes from deep down too.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that's probably one of the hardest things to do, but also probably the most important thing to do.
Yeah, it's healthy shame. Yeah. Like at the end of the day, like this is the first Grayson at 14 I've ever had. Mm-hmm. So I don't know him, you know, like I, you know, it's first Caleb I've had, first Will I've had, you know, so I'm going to have to, you know, each one of them are going to drive me crazy at times and I'm going to blow up because I'm a dad because I just worked 8 hours. I came home and you're yelling at mom and well, that ain't going to happen.
Yeah.
You know, so in that, you know,
that's
so,
how my dad was also, you know, like you can get away with a lot of stuff. But if you disrespect your mother, then you see a side of your father. You didn't know existed.
It's over. But yeah, I think the I'm sorry is like just because here's the thing, like that whole I'm sorry is healthy, is really the healthy shame side of it, right? Mm-hmm. Which is like, you know, in order for us to be in attunement with our kids is that we must be able to say, hey, we're not enough. Hey, mm-hmm. we messed up. Hey, right. I'm sorry. And then that's the gift of having healthy mm-hmm. shame, because otherwise we'll breed into toxic shame or even shamelessness, you know, which will get us into areas to where we're like, hey, I'm just going to push that aside. I think for me, that I'm sorry piece is a huge gift you can give your child.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Huge. Because then they'll be able to do it to you and they'll bring things to you that you didn't expect. Mm-hmm. Because if you can be that, because the whole, if you kind of just peel back psychology, even therapy, like when you're little kids, like 10 and under, even younger than that, like the kids will always conform to the parent.
Yeah.
Because we're big. Like, I need you. You feed me. You clothe me. Your house over here. So like if you're something wrong with you, I'm going to change.
Yeah.
If you can actually then come back to them and say, hey, I'm sorry that happened that way. And then they can attune back to you. Then they'll bring more stuff to you, which is like, wait, I just want you to be a good kid to set in time, you know, do your studies, be a good kid. Like, hold on. Like, life is messy.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
You're not going to do things right. You know? And the biggest thing I say, when I do go back to say I'm sorry, I give them an example when I did the same thing they did.
Okay, yeah.
I don't just say I'm sorry. I said, like, this is where I messed up, and this is where I did that when I was your age, too.
Yeah.
Not just a story that's, like, connects me to, like, mm-hmm. they're not crazy that they reacted that way.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I was crazy and reacted the same way.
Yeah.
You know?
I think one of the most fascinating things about being a parent is the realization of the power that you get to determine what normal is for your children.
Mm-hmm.
And that's sometimes scary and sometimes very empowering of like, how did I react to this scenario? That's how they're going to assume they should react to this scenario.
100%.
So you got to have a mirror up basically at all times.
They're watching you at all times.
They are.
All times.
For better and worse.
How you treat your wife, how you interact with your friends.
Yep.
How you do business.
How you act when you drive.
Exactly. Seriously.
Yeah.
How you act on the sideline, which is like the worst.
Yep.
Like craziness, guilty as charged, you know? So, no, it's, I agree.
Yeah.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Did you are all three of your kids born in Nashville?
Yeah. We actually, got here in 2006 and 2007 Caleb was born. We've been here since 07.
Nice.
And rode the wave and the craziness of what Nashville is. And
where are you originally from?
Ohio.
So all right,
I'm an Ohio kid, Cincinnati kid.
Okay.
Yep, my wife's from Columbus.
All right.
Yep.
So I was going to say, I saw on your Instagram you had three boys in Bengals jerseys.
We are. We're I'm huge
from
Bengals fans.
Northern Kentucky.
You're a Bengals fan?
Yes. I've been a Bengals fan since my entire life.
Let's go.
That's right.
Let's go.
That's
this podcast
right.
was meant to be.
I saw it and I looked over at my wife and I was like, I'm going to like this guy. And I saw the post that you said about the 31 years of just torment and
awful.
Mm-hmm. And then we were so close to winning that Super Bowl.
We were.
I watched the Super Bowl with Justin whenever that happened. He pretty much just paced the whole time. He's like, of course we're going to lose like this. Of course we're
going to
lose.
Because it's the Bengals curse, man.
It is. This team has changed it.
And
in Joe Burrow, we trust.
Yeah.
In Joe Burrow, we trust.
Your head coach is also pretty solid. I feel like when Joe Burrow has gone down, your head coach actually creates good game plans. And I'm
like, our offensive coordinator is now here.
Yep.
So
yeah,
no, we'll see how next season goes.
Hopefully Titans will be good too.
Yeah, Zach is he's very good at creating culture, you know, but he's very good at like caring about the people as much as he cares about the athlete. Cool. And you start to see that now in kind of the really good organizations like Andy Reid.
Yeah.
Like the guys love him. He's like dad. You know, he's a coach, but he's also like, you know, he feels that. So I'm excited for kind of the next 10 years because we suffered for 30. So
yeah,
who's the Dolphins head coach? Is it Mike Daniels?
Yeah,
his all of his press conferences. Yeah, I'll just watch him because he's just such a weird and hilarious and just so insanely intelligent person. Yeah.
Yep. And he's our age too, right?
Yeah, like, he is. Mm-hmm. They played the Bears last year, and Justin Fields had like 200 yards rushing, 300 yards passing, or something like that. And like he's in an interview, and they're like, "What were you yelling at Justin Fields?" I was like, "I told him to stop running." How did that go? He didn't take the coaching.
Like, so funny.
That is good. That is a solid joke. Yeah. Right?
No, so, no, he's there was a good like little piece on him about his story, which was he studied substance abuse and then he came back and then his whole outlook on everything and trying to make the guys better. And I remember him, like there was a clip, cause I think they did Hard Knocks
They did Hard Knocks this year.
And like he walked in and he was like, he literally goes, "Hey, that game is on me. I'm sorry."
Yeah.
Like how many coaches?
Yeah.
None.
Like very few. Yes. Or like that was me 100% whatever. This is why I called this play. Like,
yeah,
it was awesome. I was like, that right there produces so much trust. You have no idea.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was his. That was like his decision, like to come in. A lot of coaches would never, ever do that.
No, it's very much like, well, if you would have executed the game plan the way I told you to execute it, we wouldn't have been in this spot.
100%.
So many people just do not.
That's also healthy shame.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So like when you're talking about the I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's him practicing that.
Cool.
Yeah.
The same way.
Nice.
Yeah. So many people, they don't think it is on them.
Yeah.
Or they know it's on them, but like you said, the shameful part of they don't want to recognize it.
No, yeah.
Yeah, and they don't want anybody else to recognize it. If they do say, "I'm sorry," then that's my weakness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's actually the opposite. At least it is for me.
Yeah, I think I would tell you that like after he probably did that, the guys leaned in versus leaned away.
Yeah.
So they trusted him more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, and a lot of guys, you know, because of – again, what I'll say too is, it's for the coaches to coach like that, the dads who dad like that, it's because who their dad was and who they came through and what they saw that was weakness and whatever. And the truth is, as you start to unpack the next couple decades, you're going to see that a lot of these coaches in the way that you're going to see, like Steve Kerr over there in Golden State when they were doing that run forever, their number one, core value is joy.
Oh, was it?
Yeah, and care
for
each other.
Yeah.
And he believes in that.
Yeah.
And, like, when you start to create teams like that, the best teams with the most resources, the most talented, and the best schemes will always lose to the ones who actually love and care for each other.
Yeah.
Always.
That's cool. Yep. Tell us a little bit more about, like, your leadership retreats. I know, Justin, we were talking about how, like, you, like, go to Montana and Wyoming and stuff, like, to do leadership retreats. So tell us a little bit about that.
No, it's good. Yeah, so I got connected to a – organization called Refuge, probably. Has anybody ever talked about that on here?
No.
Yeah, so it's an organization probably about seven, eight years ago. Got invited on a trip from a guy here. And basically it's a place for, like, leaders, athletes, musicians, pastors, basically to go and just rest.
Cool.
So it's just a refuge. That's what it's called. So a place to just be out in nature, quiet, like, literally – like our phone, like the Wyoming property, the phones don't work. Well, you literally have to tell. I literally tell them to tell their wives, like, the phones, like 30 minutes on the drive, which is a drive into the. It's like a 35 minute drive on this gravel road back to this like valley called Hidden Valley Ranch.
Yeah.
And 5 minutes in, I go, "You will have no service." And I'm like, "So you better tell her."
Yeah, it's not like a gimmick. Like, "Oh, there's no cell service." Like, no, legitimately, there's no cell service.
And then we just encouraged them while they're there. I was like, "Man, if you can leave for 5 days and just unplug, you know, it's good." So I got invited, and then I went on like two or three trips. And then I started like taking people. You know, so I got to, you know, do a trip to Montana, and then I started, like, they opened up a new property, so I signed up for that. So I'd go to, so I'm, this year will be, I think, like, trip number 15 and 16.
Wow.
You know, cool. So we take between 18 and 26 guys each time, all different across, you know, a lot of leaders, a lot of pastors, a lot of musicians, retired athletes, you know, because a lot of it's during season, so the other ones can't go. But, you know, it's a place to where you get served. Yeah. Right. And so there's a little faith to it, but it's not like overly, you know, done, I would say. And the whole idea is if you get there and you just want to sleep for 8 hours,
yes,
sleep. The whole thing around is get what you need. So if you want to sit and, you know, look out and just sit on a boat and fish, do it. If you want to ride horses, do it. If you want to sit in the hot tub, do it. Yeah. If you want to play cards, do it. If you want to smoke a cigar, do it.
Cool.
Like, it doesn't matter. Like, so, like, it's like, but the whole idea is like, the people who come there, people need a lot from them. When you go there, there's like 20 guys around you to where if you're sitting and I'm having a cigar and we're having a conversation and it goes out or I need another one, like, they're going to have it ready for you by the time it's out.
Cool.
Because they want you to just rest.
Yeah.
And it's an organization where we just take people and, you know, it has a waiting list, you know, so, and you it's kind of this, the website's not very good. The thing, it's like this, like, little underground type thing, mm-hmm. to where you got to know somebody to know somebody. It's like speakeasy, but it's a retreat. Yes, exactly. So, but yeah, so like they've, you know, the guy actually started it. He was a burnout youth pastor that, unfortunately, that happens a lot.
Those in churches, are pretty common,
you know.
Yeah,
and
like,
so, yep. So. And he just burned out and took 4 guys, and next year took 8, then 16, and then it's been going since about 2014. And so I'm just blessed that, you know, I'm able to bring a, you know, group of guys every year. But it's one of those places to where you can do it all you want all day. But then it's 7 o'clock at night. The only thing we ask you to do is be at, we call it the table. Mm-hmm. And so we eat together. We all dine together and just eat at this very long table. What happens in that table is some of the most profound and impactful things I've seen in my life.
Yeah.
So, like, first night is like, hey, you ask a question like, hey, what do you need while you're here? A lot of guys don't have a clue. Like, the guys come the first time, they're like, I need fishing. I need,
yeah.
You know, I need to, you know, drink. I'm like, what? Okay. So, and the next night is like, hey, a lot of people, you know, are carrying things. You came here with a backpack on that's like super weighted. Like, what if I told you could take that backpack off and lay it here on this table, mm-hmm. and it'll stay here? What would you lay down so you can actually be here? And so you're not thinking about where you, that's all the things there. Because if you can get present with yourself while you're here, you'll be better when you walk out of here.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of that. Or we ask the question about, hey, if your wife was sitting here, what she would say that you're stressed with right now, or she needs from you right now. So, like, very hard, like, real questions,
yeah.
right? And then kind of third night's like, what are you noticing about yourself? What have you uncovered? What is somebody, what's a great conversation that you've had, you know, that you'd like to bring up? And then the last night, she's like, hey, what are you taking back? You know, and it's not this like 180 degree shift we tell people. It's like, can you move 2 degrees?
Yeah.
What's 2 degrees? And so it's just a place where you literally just disconnect. And you get back to actually what we were all kind of made to do, which is sit around tables or yeah. podcasts,
yeah.
And talk. You know, they say all the time, and the guy says it there, like the average, you know, 30 years ago, the average time people spent at dinner was 90 minutes.
Oh.
Today, it's 13 minutes.
Yeah, wow. If you're lucky.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, like, but everything used to be solved and discussed and plugged in. And so I tell people all the time is like, the table here is growing and you need to go back to your lives and create your own tables. Mm-hmm. And so the goal is, how do we get people to sit down, slow down, and just tune out the noise and just be present and
yeah.
what's hard and what's good. I was at a buddy's house on Sunday and there was 10 of us and we just another buddy was in town, grabbed some steaks, threw it down over here in East Nashville. And he just said, hey, what's working right now and what's not?
Yeah.
And we all just went around and shared, you know, what's good and what's hard right now. You know, you can do that, you know, just and see how, you know, just determine how safe the table is.
Yeah. Yeah, correct.
Some of those are. Do not do that at Thanksgiving table. So, like, that's where, you know, we do, obviously, I take a lot of people on those, and
yeah.
we do them at the collective, too. And so, like, one of the we do retreats at, you know, at the collective, but in the evening, I'll sit down after we've worked with them all day and I'll say, hey, part of the retreat is actually we're going to share a meal together. So you're not leaving when we're done or going back to your room. Like we, and when we go do it, it's like in a private space where, like, I tell the waiters, like, at this point, you don't come in anymore.
Okay.
Like, you're not allowed in. And so, so we can talk and have real conversation about real things. Like, yeah. It's fascinating. I sat, was it 2 years ago? 2 years ago in Palm Springs with the top 10 hospitals in America. Vanderbilt was there.
Yeah.
Mayo, MD Anderson, all of them.
Dang, yeah.
And the guy from Vanderbilt invited me in, and we sat down, and he wanted me, because I had done a lot of work there, to talk about that. I was like, they just came out of COVID. They just been at a conference where they've been watching PowerPoints all day.
Yeah.
So I just started, and I just said, all right, what we're going to do tonight is we're going to do this thing called the table. And they don't have no clue what I'm talking about. Like, these are the top 10 hospitals in America with that person's position, the similar around.
Yeah.
And said, here's what we're going to start with. Said, hey, what's been hard over the last 2 years? Because they were running COVID.
Oh, yeah. Well,
everything's hard.
Yeah.
And these are the most people in all the other hospitals in America that know exactly what you're talking about. And we sat there for an hour, and they talked about what was hard.
Yeah.
And then after that, I said, hey, also, what have you noticed about somebody from afar? Because you guys only get together a couple times a year this way. That you maybe want to just say, hey, thank you for that. Or, you know, I saw you do this. Let me just get a little affirmation. Like, say, who at this table is, like, really impacted you? Were there immediately, you know, kind of really directly or indirectly? And that went on for an hour.
Yeah.
And then at the end, I said, hey, this is kind of what we do. If you'd like to talk to me, then let's talk.
Yeah.
But it wasn't, it was like, how do you create moments like that to where, you know, people of same industry, same position, they all know, like, what's not working and what is working, especially yeah. in that year with COVID coming yeah. out of it. So, I think that there's so much power in the table. And it's funny, this year, like, one of the things, like, on my to-do list that I wanted to do is I'm going to start doing tables with, like, my oldest sons and his friends. Oh, I'm cool. Like, just bringing something. I'll cook burgers or something yeah. like that. Just bring it to the table, and I'll just be like, simple stuff. Like, I'm not going to be like, hey, what about your girlfriend? Yeah. You know, like, I'm going to be like, what's good and what's hard?
Yeah.
You know, like, simple stuff, just to get them into this
yeah.
disconnecting from their phones, right? Yeah. And just be like, hey, this is life, guys.
And
this
is not life. Will create probably some everlasting hope. Friendships between
yeah.
them.
I think so. Yep.
Yeah, that's beautiful, man.
Yeah. So, yeah, and so we're going to do some of those with people here as well. Cool. So, there's a lot of people who go on that trip in Nashville, so we're trying to, like, figure out how to, you know, create tables, like, once a month so people can just, like,
yeah.
release versus having to fly to Montana to do it. Although that's fine.
But Montana isn't an awful.
Yeah, I was going to say.
It is not bad, let me just say.
Is it? Yeah. I feel like disconnecting is a practice. Like, you do have to practice it. Yeah. Since you've done it so many times, when you're out there for those, like, 5 days, is it hard for you to disconnect, or do you have enough familiarity with it where you're good with it now?
Yeah, so I tell everybody, like, the first year, you're like, what the heck is this place?
Oh, yeah.
You're like, what are you talking about? Like, yeah. I can disconnect. Like, and then year two, you know, year two, you kind of get there, and you kind of settled in by day two. Most people settle in day three, like, because, yeah. like, they just don't – you just don't understand. You're like, wait
a second. You got to detox.
Like, yeah, you just don't understand. And then you watch, in year three, people are like – they're in when they get on the plane. They're like, all right, awesome. I'm out. Like, some people turn their airplane mode on. Like, they won't – when they get on the plane, so they can be ready when they get to the site. And so – but, yeah, sometimes it takes a while. Sometimes it takes, you yeah. know, but that's kind of the – what it looks like when you're going to those sites. No, I get there pretty quick. I think the first couple of years where I host, I'm like, hey, are you okay? Are you okay? Mm-hmm. And literally, like, the first night now, because the first question is always like, hey, what do you need while you're here? I said, I need you all not to need me. Uh-huh. And then I can be here.
Yeah.
And if you can do that, then we'll have some great conversations.
Yeah.
You know, so get what you need. Don't think too hard about it. And I'll be able to settle in, you know? And so that kind of gives them kind of like, you know, and I've been doing, I mean, like I said, like, this year is 15 and 16.
So, yeah.
You know, which is fun, because one of the trips I'm bringing, actually a guy we talked about before, and then yeah. another guy, they're bringing six guys.
Oh, that's cool.
Each that I don't like, that I don't, I know some of them, but, like, this is all first timers.
Which will be cool.
Different. Which will be, so there'll be like 12 that have gone a lot, and then 12 that are like, they'll sit at the first table and go, what the hell is this place?
When does the Kool-Aid come out?
Exactly. Exactly. So
we can say his name because I think we were actually talking about trying to have him on. But
oh, he's amazing.
David Swift is his name. He's a competitor. That's how I know him, is through the landscape industry.
Yep.
He's a competitor of mine, but that's how I heard about you as well, is through his Instagram of, I think it was pictures of him on horseback, and I was like, what is this?
Yeah.
I talked to him about it, and he brought it up, and it was a pretty cool story to hear about all the things that occur at that place and the transformations that can occur as well.
Yeah, David's been a great friend. Like I said, I was with him like on Friday night, you know, just our wives and us, we've been traveling together, and I think that, you know, when you get out there and you can actually decompress, you know, and really, really unplug, you come back way better for the rest of your people in your life, you know, employees, teammates, you know, wife, kids, friends, you know. And what I tell people is after you've come a couple of times, like, you need to create space here. Like, so one of the things that I'm working towards is that I last year worked 42 weeks on purpose.
Yeah.
To give myself, like, time. I was like, okay, what's my budget? What do I need? You know, where is it at? But like, you know, America's one of the only cultures like that works as much as we do. Like, if I could say anything, anybody here is like, take more time off.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, like do it. Like, don't let any day roll over. Like, don't you dare. And I think that like those things we have to understand, like, replenish you more than you can imagine. And when you unplug, like, don't get up at 6 a.m. and like do your emails till your people wake up at 8 a.m. Like, totally, like, leave your computer at home. I promise you, if you're a good leader, a good teammate, or a good employee, the ship won't go down.
Yeah.
Now, if you're not good, that's your fault.
It's hard to think. It is hard to think that way sometimes.
Just be honest, Shame.
True.
That is something that. So I'm an executive operations manager for a landscape company, and is something that my wife tells me all the time. Your company will not go down in flames if you do not answer that phone call or take that text, but it's always in my mind. It's hard to turn off.
Because
then, like, when you do come back, and that smallest of little things that you're like, if I was there, I could have fixed that.
Yeah.
It's always in the back of my mind, and it is a hard thing to turn off.
And I'll say this to help you on those words. And if you were with your wife and your kids, that if you were there, you wouldn't have missed that.
Yep. Yeah.
Fix versus miss.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Got it? Yep. You can fix as much as you want in your there will be endless things for you to fix at your business. Endless.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But there's only a certain amount of misses that you get. Yeah. I heard something super sad like a couple weeks ago. It's like from 0 to 18, you'll see your kids every day.
Yeah.
Right? Mostly. Once they leave the house, you'll see them one more year.
Yep.
Yeah.
Like, no work, no client, no teammate issue, nothing is worth your vacations and your time with your family.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Absolutely. And that's so hard in this world because we set our world, and at least America, we set ourselves up to have to work 52 weeks. Or we think we do, right?
Yep.
And so there's this conscious, I just tell people, we actually, as a part of our engagement, when I told you we do like work at home, we actually survey the spouse and we bring the results to the leadership team.
Yeah.
Like, hey, I can unplug at home. Hey, I'm present on vacation. Hey, I feel like I'm going to, I can talk to them. Like, all just 10 questions. And they always score horrible. You know, but what's good, because you get to know where it's at. And then you say, then you get the leadership team to actually then, hey, when, you know, Devin's going on vacation, we will have your back so you can be on vacation.
Yeah.
There is ways to do this. We just choose not to. And what's fascinating is like, as soon as we show them that, the very next person, there's like, hey, like, I literally go, who's going on the next vacation next, right? And whoever is, like, usually somebody within the next couple of weeks. And if somebody does, I go, I just want you to go first. Like, don't, like, tell your bosses, tell everybody, like, I'm going to unplug the entire time. Mm-hmm. And this is the resounding thing when they come back. The best trip I've ever been on in my life. What my spouse said. And it's like, it's that easy. Like, but I went with you. I've been the guy that's wake up at 6 and it's like, you know, and I'm like, get up and just like read a book, read the Bible, like go for a walk. Like,
Yeah.
Work out.
When you were talking about the vacations, I was that guy that I still had like 2 or 3 weeks of vacation at the end of every year.
Yeah.
But when I had Ada, I have used up every single.
Good for
single
you. Used every second.
I thought that's because she was sick so much.
I didn't have to take off when she was sick because Haley was there or my parents were there, but I took it off anyways just to be with her. I think I had like 2 hours left.
Oh, really?
And that was it. A couple, like probably about a month ago. So I don't know what it is now, but yeah, I am trying to
use it
as much as possible.
It is a weird thing in American culture that whenever you get to level of responsibility that usually pays pretty well financially, it is then more difficult to actually step away from it.
Yeah.
Because inherently you do believe if I'm not here, what breaks while I'm gone.
Yeah.
And, not every team is good at communicating to people
100%
that will be okay and we've got your back.
Well, the funny thing is I have a great team as I have a great team
even more the reason.
Yep.
Yeah. No, I think that, you know, like I said, you only get a certain amount of time, you know, with them. And I think that awareness, you know, has to be that it's also, I also tell people too, like, it's also like a teammate / leadership opportunity to show like your team, like, hey, step up for me.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, let's see how good you can be and take care of all the things that I would normally take care of, you know? So it also gives people empowerment and stuff like that and say, hey, I want to unplug, because here's what's also, and I said this to people. So I'll work with an organization. I'll just pick one, 14 executives, 14,000 people. And I said, the second that you answer an email on your vacation, the other 14,000 do.
Yeah.
I said, that is what you are modeling.
Yeah.
And I said, the second you do that, they think they have to do that to even be good. And I'm putting quotations up.
Yeah.
A good employee. So that's the culture you want to create. Then keep doing it.
Yep.
If you want people to unplug, then let them unplug. But you have to do it first.
Yeah, because the reality is, if you're the CEO of a company, you're not like every employee. You're the boss of the CEO. Yeah. So whatever you do, naturally, kind of like being a dad, whatever you do, your kids are going to be like, this is what normal is. And if I don't do this, there's the deficit that I'm creating every time I don't do it.
Correct. Mm-hmm. Very similar. Yep. Very, very, very connected there.
Yep. Crap.
Justin's like, oh, man. Justin has left the studio.
No. Dang it. I mean, there have been, I'm just thinking back to the times that I've told some of my senior account managers, man, why'd you answer that email when you were on vacation? And it was probably because I've done the same thing when I was on vacation.
For sure.
Because I kept telling them, hey, man, don't do any of that stuff.
Vacation. But get out of here.
They never listened to me. They still answered those. Crap.
I mean,
it's all about creating that culture.
Pretty much. It's really hard to acknowledge the moments where you look at somebody and you're like, hey, do as I say, not as I do.
Yeah.
It's like the worst leadership style ever. But you have to be in tune enough with your actions to actually notice that you're doing it. And sadly, a lot of us are overstimulated and overextended at all times where you can't actually look in the mirror and actually see what you look like.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we're just...
do this right here. Yeah.
Sorry.
This is the table.
This is the table. That's right.
It is. No, I think it's we're over... that's the word. We think busy is cool.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm busy. How many people? Oh, how's it going? Oh, things are busy. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I packed. You know, it was busy. I was like, busy's not cool.
Yeah.
Busy is the opposite of cool.
Yeah.
Busy tells me you don't have your life in order. You don't have priorities. You don't have, you know, you're not spending time for yourself. You're not taking care of yourself. Because the truth is that, you know, you taking time, like, all these guys are like, oh, I can't take 5 days without my wife. I go, what's wrong with you? I was like, you understand that, like, you going on a refuge trip like that, or spending 5 days, whatever you love to do, golf, fish, I don't care. Like, you taking care of yourself and you filling up your cup, the amount to which you can actually love yourself is the amount to which you can love others. Mm-hmm. And the more you can fill your cup up, let your wife fill her cup up, let your kids, like, you guys will be better for each other.
Yep.
And I think that, like, we think that, like, we're going to get all filled up at work. And I was like, newsflash.
Yeah.
Absolutely not.
Nope.
I'm lucky. I get to do what I love every day. Like, there's a lot of people that don't. They like their job, but it's like, it's still a job, and it's good, and I'm good at it, and I have great. But it's like, at the end of the day, it's like, you really got to get away from the word busy, because you can wake up at 50 and go, what did I do?
Yep. Yeah, I think this is like the third or fourth time that I brought up the movie Click.
Only third or fourth. This is like 20.
Okay, maybe. I don't know.
Well, but, I've left an episode three or four times.
Oh, okay. The ones that you haven't omitted out. Yeah. But yes, that's what I think of is the movie Click, where it, like, half of his life just fast forwards, and he's like, what the heck just happened? My daughter's about to get married, and I don't remember any of those years. Mm-hmm. And it is, for me, it is a very emotional movie to watch.
Yeah.
Even when I didn't even have kids, it was very emotional. Like, I do not want to be that type of dad.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And it's hard in this society, because it's all keeping up. It's hard. I mean, you're a Nashville Dad's podcast. Like, it's hard here in Nashville.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a lot of, like, keeping up with the Joneses comparison. And unfortunately, Facebook, Instagram, all that stuff is very comparison driven. It's like, oh, look at that. Like, they're doing that. Why can't I do that? Mm-hmm. And, like, so, like, we're set up in a world to where, that's why I tell you, you better raise emotionally resilient children to where they can show up with you with their stuff, because otherwise they're being raised in a comparison culture.
Yeah.
And if you don't do something about that, then they're going to, like, try to work hard or be busy to get to that. Mm-hmm. And you got to show them that actually sitting around a table and having good conversation with your friends matters way more.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to instill that after, because I found that, like, in my 30s.
Yeah.
Right? I kind of knew what it was. But, like now I have other friend groups that I go to, and, like, they want to talk about the Predators and, like, the Titans and the weather. And I'm like, this, get me out of here. And so, like, and I tell people all the time, you don't have to be friends with everybody. Like I have a great core group of friends that we can go super deep. Like, conversation on Friday night at dinner was, all of us are in, you know, our own little kind of check-in therapy groups. We're in it together and stuff. And our wives are in one, and we're in one. And they shared about how we're changing because of the group, and we shared about how they're changing.
Yeah.
I literally looked at them, I go, there's not a table in Nashville having conversation like this.
Yeah.
Like at this deep, like, level. And it's like, and it was so cool, because it's like, how are you leading the family well? This is what I see about you. And so, like, those type of conversations and being able to have those lets you be able to go have those with your children.
Mm-hmm.
And the more of those that you can have, the more emotionally resilient your kids can be, because you can actually be with them and not wishing they were something.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, I think ultimately what I feel like we're kind of talking about is being able to create a safe space in which vulnerability can happen and then be met with open arms, basically, is a very rare thing to find in your day-to-day life. Very. So if you have a group of friends in which you can actually be, you can feel safe enough to let them in, then hold on tightly to it.
Very tightly.
It's not very common.
Yeah. And go find it, too.
Yeah, that too. Yeah, can. Yeah. Mm-hmm. If you don't currently have it, it's probably out there for you somewhere.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
Aww.
Look at that. They just hugged.
They just hugged.
But no, we're both co-hosts on this, and we've talked to a lot of dads, but all the conversations we have on the car ride to and from.
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like I can open up to you about anything.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah, man.
Appreciate that.
Yeah, this is a very enlightening podcast episode that we're having right now.
Oh, man. I think we are made to be empathetic. We are empathetic beings, and I pray for everyone to have more opportunities to be empathetic to the people that are around them, because I think it makes you a better person.
Yeah, I think so. Like, one of the things my mentor that has taught me a lot, like, it's really, everybody wants to matter and belong.
Yeah, without question.
You know, and, like, if you two can matter each other and belong and just stay in it with them, because there's enough people out there that are going to fix you, help you push through, figure it out, and probably do it in some moral fashion. I would say you need people that can just show up and be with you.
Yeah.
Like, and I can just dump and not be fixed.
Mm-hmm.
And if the more that you can actually do that, even with your friends, the more you'll be able to do it with your children and with your wife.
Yeah.
And so one of the big questions that I say, hey, is, like, when you are – and somebody shares and opens up vulnerable, isn't it like, hey, you know, what can I do with that? It's like, hey, what do you need?
Yeah.
Like, my wife sometimes, she goes, I just need to share. I'm like, great.
Cool.
You want anything from me? Nope.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Yeah.
You know, or you need me to solve something or give us advice on something?
Yeah.
Sure, great, I will. But instead of me jumping right in, because man of the house and that it, it's like, hey, do you need me? You need anything with that? And sometimes yes, sometimes no. Same with my kids. Like, you know, I try because they're kids, and I've done everything that they've tried to do. And I'm like, hey, anything you need?
Yeah.
You know, and do you want my advice? You know, do you want my feedback? Nope. Okay. Cool, man.
Well, I mean, I think culturally, as men, we are rewarded in almost every situation based on our problem-solving skills.
Yeah.
Why did you get a raise at work? I was really good at problem-solving. Why did you get a higher position? I'm good at problem-solving in this company.
Yep.
So I feel like, yeah, there are times with my wife where I'm like, okay, cool. Is this something you, like, am I supposed to listen or help you problem-solve? Because I need to start there because I'm going to go down completely different tracks of how I pay attention. Because if you're just like, let me listen, cool. My empathy is going to be greater. If you're like, help me problem-solve this, I'm going to be like, thinking of like, what about this angle? What about this angle? As opposed to like, what was your experience?
And that conversation can go a whole different direct.
Yeah.
Yeah. If all she wanted to do is be listened to and you are chiming in on what she should have done.
Yeah.
I catch myself doing
consistent,
that.
It's a very easy way to get in a fight with your spouse.
Yep.
One thing we always try to tell guests on this podcast is basically that line of thought is like, who are you as a dad? What's your day-to-day life look like? Because I'm very aware of most people already are being told how they should be a dad.
Yeah.
So like, who actually are you as a dad? Because most people aren't willing to have that conversation even to start with.
Yeah.
They just immediately assume like, well, you know, if you did this as a dad, and you're like, you didn't even ask what I did in the first place. Like, it's so rude.
It's good.
Like,
no, it's good. Yeah, yeah.
So because, I value the opportunity to just glimpse into someone's world and know what their life is like.
Yeah. So, you know, obviously, I'm the breadwinner in the house, so I'm out. I travel, you know, quite a bit. So, like, obviously, my wife is the professional taxi, you know, as that comes. But, you know, I think that, you know, as a dad, it's a really good question that I want to make sure that I pause and at least give you, you know, truly what it is versus just rattling what's up in my head, you know, because, like, probably what's in my gut and heart is probably more important. Yeah, I think, you know, for me, I probably got it wrong, like, early in my career because I was climbing the ladder and doing the things and winning, like, that's what I did. And, you know, you guys know, like, Facebook memories,
you know,
and stuff that pops up? Like I genuinely hate those because I look at them and I go, I was in that picture and I see that thing and my kids tell me I was a good dad, but I wasn't there. I don't remember. Because I had so many busies and so many things I put before them because I want to give them a better life and I want them to, you know, have all the things that I didn't have, all of the stories we tell ourselves.
Yeah.
And so out of that actual, you know, probably awareness and pain of me being want to be present, I think that that's the biggest thing that I want to make sure in all moments of my kids' life that I'm there. I'm not like thinking, you know, I'm not trying to solve it for them, but I'm not even thinking about like, hey, I got work. But like when I'm with them, it's like, how do I be present? And am I good at it? Sometimes. Am I bad at it? Of course. Like, but I think that the work, you know, that I've done over really kind of the last 7-8 years, just around being more self-aware on the emotion side, it's really helped be more present. So presence is a huge thing as a dad that I try to be. So I try to be it at, be as everything they want me to be at, right? As it pertains to sports and, you know, my son, hey, I made a beat, walk upstairs, go sit and listen, right? Just be present, give him feedback. I think that's super important. I think that too, like, I don't try to do it for them, if that makes sense. So like, I really do my best to, you know, like both of like my two oldest really found something they're super passionate about, but I didn't say, hey, you need to, and this is what you needed to do. And this is how you needed to do it. I gave them like, hey, this is what you could do, but they had to find their own anger and passion for, you know, whatever they like. One likes soccer, one's like beats, but I didn't get up at, like, one of mine gets up at 5:30 a.m., practice till 6:15, gets a shower and goes to school. I didn't tell him to do that.
Yeah.
I said, there's ways to do it, to get more touches on the ball so you can become better. He chose to do that, right? My oldest, he bought, and this is a music town, like, he bought Ableton, like, 2 years ago. And he's probably made over 150 beats now.
That's cool.
What is it?
But it's like
a digital audio workspace.
Okay. And like helps you like make beats and pulls things off different things. And so like, you know, but he had to like go on YouTube and figure out how to do it and fake make beats from like learn. So like, it's also very important, like let your kids, I think I've just let my kids, find what they love because I've found what I love to do. Mm-hmm. And so they see that in their dad and they want to do that. But I go, I don't expect you to do, like, you can find what you love at 50.
Yeah.
Like you don't have to decide it today. Like my entrepreneur son, the middle one, he's probably tried 5 businesses, you know, it's just him. And he likes something new every day. And like, it's cool. Like that's him. But I really try to kind of not tell them what to do. I did that probably early. And so presence, and then just be a little bit more open I guess you would say, is probably important to like their own journey,
yeah.
And supporting and giving them support and ideas around it. I think I do a lot of that versus like, oh, here's the action plan and the business plan. But like, mm-hmm. Like, do you love it? Is it awesome? Like being, I really, really try to let them bring their emotions to me,
yeah.
You know? So like they'll come up and they'll just, you know, like we have such a good relationship with our kids. Like one of our kids is like, I shouldn't say we said like we have a growing relationship,
right? Yeah,
but,
yeah.
But like, you know, one of them got in trouble one time and, you know, we didn't blow up. Like we don't get like crazy. Like we have older kids, right? So like they can cheat on tests and they can, you know, they
the
can,
opportunities
you
for
know,
mischief are a lot greater than
way
for my child.
Greater. They can say, they can say something different. Right. Yes. So like what was fascinating is we just said, okay, well, how would you deal with that differently?
Yeah.
You know, like, why did you do, what was behind that? And I try not to ask why, because why puts them on the defense. It's like, what was behind that?
Yeah.
You know, how did you think to do that? Because the why is a very defensive word. And so, like, I really try to ask those questions. And then there was one time he just brought and he just said, hey, yeah, like, I also want to tell you guys, like, I cheated on a test. And I'm like, I would have never said that to my parents.
No.
In my life.
I still haven't said that to my
exactly.
parents.
Exactly. And he's like, hey, I did. And, like, this is it. And I'm sorry. And I just don't want to, I just want you guys to know. And I'm
yeah.
like, and he went back in his room, and Jen and I looked at each other like, what just happened?
Yeah.
It's like, so I think it's like presence, just like support in whatever they're doing, and then just like really been trying to be, she's super more peaceful than I am. I know you guys talked about Enneagram on here.
Yeah.
I'm an 8, she's a 9,
okay,
so
cool.
she's super chill and
yep.
awesome, but like she's very calm, and I think that's a calming presence in our house, so I try to like mimic her in that in all these intensify places.
What would my wife do? Because that's the correct
yes, 100%.
I think a lot of dads probably ask themselves that question.
Yeah.
My wife would do the right thing here. So what would she do?
Yeah. So I think that's me as a dad, just trying to be more present, massively supportive. And then, you know, I think that when the big things happen, they're actually not that big.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you got to give perspective to that.
Yeah.
And I think Jen and I both do a good job of like when they do something wrong or something's difficult, we connect with them through our stories and be super honest with them.
Yeah.
You know, one of my oldest, I love this story, is like he walked up and we could tell something was wrong and a girl he'd been like going out with like dumped him. And this is like in junior high. And so he was kind of upset about it and we saw him like kind of get a little ticked because they had, I think it was a little while. But he and I said, yeah, man, I said, I remember being dumped too.
Yeah.
It sucks. It's sad.
Yeah.
I didn't say there's more fish in the sea. Forget about her.
Yeah.
You know, don't worry. You'll be okay. It's like, I don't want to caretake him.
Yeah.
And then Jen and I shared with like times somebody broke up with us.
Yeah.
And like that moment right there, we can sit in it with him and be able to not fix him, solve him, tell him it's going to be okay. Cause we don't know if it is going to be.
Yeah.
And just share our stories around it. I think that has been, that's the type of dad is like, I've messed up a ton. I am not perfect. Quit. Mm-hmm. I hate when, like, that's the biggest thing is, like, our kids look up to us. But, like, the more you can tell them how you were imperfect, the more perfect you'll become to them.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And I think that that's one of the things that I think is so important in just being honest with them.
Yeah.
And so those are, I mean, I hope that's maybe answering your question.
What you were saying was your kid can be completely honest with you and can actually take your words of wisdom or whatever it is and actually intake that because he knows, hey, I'm not alone. My dad actually did go through with this or had that experience. He's just not barking at me like, ah, whatever. You,
Get over the girl.
Yeah.
Seriously.
You had that experience. Oh, crap. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to listen to him now. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I've been listening through, since you just mentioned that, How to Do the Work by Nicole DePera. I don't know if you've read that one. It's kind
of
I know of it.
I don't know much. Yeah,
she has like a chapter where it basically talks about like that moment of your son or kid comes up to you and is like, oh man, this girl broke my heart. And your thought is usually to be like, oh, there's other girls out there. You'll be fine or whatever. What your kid wants is emotional validation.
100%.
And they don't like, then you can do that. We kind of almost have to start with like who you are, how you feel right now is very valid.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, there's other girls. But, like, a lot of our parents, at least, kind of the stereotype for them, is that your parents look at me like, oh, you'll be better. You'll be fine. You'll got this. You got this.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, I know I've got this, but this still hurts.
Yep.
So what do I do with my pain? Because all you told me was that it'll be better eventually. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't how do I triage my pain, basically, yeah. when you just told me that it'll be okay one day?
Yeah, I mean, because and we can't, like, truly fault, our parents.
No,
because
of course not.
Our parents came out of a generation where it was, like, put your head down, go to work, make it better. Even their parents were even a
yep.
harder generation. It's like, hey, we came out of the war.
Yeah.
Like, hey, put your head down, give a better life, get a better, but, like,
yeah.
they're just not emotionally, this type of stuff is, like, if you remember, it's like all of us, whether we were like when we were crying, whatever, go back into your room, come out with a smile on your face.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like we all got that,
yeah.
our age and up. It's like that's basically says, I can't have my feelings with you. Mm-hmm. So go in there and you're not allowed to have your feelings. When your feelings are back with a smile on your face, then come back because yeah. I am not able to have feelings with you.
Yeah.
It's not actually about the kid having the feelings.
Nope. Yeah.
It's like I don't know how to deal with those feelings. Mm-hmm. And
yeah.
so for me, it's like, I want to be in it with my kids as much as possible
yep.
that they'll let me to do that. And the more that we've done that, the more they bring to us. And Jen and I just go, what just happened?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
which are gifts.
Yeah.
Right?
They really are. Yeah.
You know, because I mean, I have a lot of people that I know that are my age, our age. And I just go, and they're still scared of their dad.
Yeah.
You know, don't talk to their mom. Like it's just, there's a lot of things where that will continue to pass down into generations mm-hmm. until you try to shift
yeah.
that kind of generational mindset or curse, if you call
trauma,
it.
Whatever
yeah,
you want to call it.
I don't care,
but I do think, regardless if it's intentional or not, however your parents treated you, until you have the moment to stop and be like, I don't want to treat my kids like this, you mm-hmm. will gradually, it's like your neural pathways are built that way.
Yeah.
Like there's so much inertia going that direction.
Correct.
So you put a hard stop on it, you're going to repeat what your parents did to you for better and for worse.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So,
for sure.
Do you have any, whenever you started doing the self-discovery, do you have any book recommendations? Were there any books you read or anything
yeah.
like that?
I mean, here in town, there is, the feelings work is,
yeah.
Voice of the Heart by Chip Dodd.
Okay.
He's a local guy here, but then, like, there's a lot of people that do his work here. So, this might sound crazy, but to some people, probably a lot of people who listen to you, but, like, every week, I go and I check in at a group where we put 8 feelings on the ground and,
yeah.
we share our feelings. We check in, we say, hey, I feel anger, lonely, fear, shame, sad, whatever. There's 8 of them. And then we can talk about what's behind it, but you're not allowed to fix me. Like you
yeah.
can, I can talk about my life. You can talk about your life. And we can connect to the kind of the feelings around it. Right. And so mm-hmm. I would say on that self-discovery is like, I would say start to like connect back to yourself,
mm-hmm.
like who you are and understand it's okay to have feelings. You have them anyways. Humans are built with feelings more than they're built with intellect, to be completely honest.
Yep.
So like Voice of the Heart, that, but then there's like a group here called 10 Man, that has groups and you can do that. You know, we do groups as well that are in that space, but I think the self-discovery is you have to go on that journey. But I think that the Voice of the Heart book is good. Self-discovery books, I think there's probably more programs, I guess you would
okay.
say, like
yeah.
that. Like OnSite has some good programs here. These are all kind of therapy-based stuff. Because
yeah,
most
yeah.
people, honestly, you need to go do that.
You do.
Yeah.
Like you need to go to therapy. Yeah. You need to go to therapy. Like everybody.
It's a consistent theme
yes,
of our podcast
yes,
also.
Yes,
it's, hey,
yes.
do you have a counselor yet?
Yes, seriously.
So.
You know? Yeah, I think that's where I kind of started. I think there's... there's other resources that aren't popping in my head right now.
Yeah, you're good.
Yeah,
I didn't know if like one, like Falling Upward by Richard Rohr was one of those books,
yeah.
or Breathing Underwater, where it kind mm-hmm. of described like, hey, you tried to build a kingdom for most of your life. It kind of fell apart. Mm-hmm. Now, how do you rebuild your life, basically?
Yeah.
And like reading those two books, like changed my outlook on how to treat people, basically.
Okay.
So if you had yeah. any books like that
yeah.
in your head where it's like, oh, this one really helped me
yeah.
figure myself out.
I would start with Voice of the Heart.
Okay, cool.
Because that's like connecting back to what we already know and have,
yeah.
all of us have, which
yep.
is feelings. And I think it's a good place to
sweet
to go through. And then you can, I mean, there's also a workbook that you can go that's awesome.
Because yeah.
then you're like, not just reading, you're like, oh, I have to write down my trauma. Like, what the hell? You know what
I
mean? What I'm sad about.
It.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
so. So those are good places to start,
cool.
I would say.
Yeah. Awesome. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Justin, do you want to start wrapping the episode down? That way
sure.
we can all go watch the Super Bowl.
Yeah, it's Super Bowl time. Super Bowl
so,
time. Yeah, yeah.
End of every episode, we do 5 questions.
Oh, cool.
So I will do the first one. You have 3 kids, so did you have backup names for all 3 kids, 2 kids?
Yeah, I have a funny story for – so Caleb is Caleb Michael Stinson.
Okay.
Right? And then it would actually going to be – so mine's BMS, so, like, my middle name is Michael. But this is a funny story. So, like, when I was going to be named Paul, and my aunt pointed out that my initials would have been PMS. And so, like, we were, like, thinking about, there was a couple, Caleb was kind of it, but, like, I think we had Owen for my middle one.
Okay.
Was instead of Grayson. And then Caleb was the one, though, Caleb, the oldest. And Will, I think that was one and done, too. Cool. So only Grayson was, like, Owen. Like, I think that was it.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Next question. Do you have a favorite TV dad?
TV dad, wow.
Or fictional dad. You can go movie also.
I tell you what, Craig T. Nelson on Parenthood was
That's a good dad.
Pretty good.
What? Who was it?
Craig T. Nelson on Parenthood.
Yeah.
Oh.
Zeke,
yeah.
That dude. Yeah.
Yeah. Do you like crying during TV shows?
Somewhat, sometimes.
Depending on the day.
Parenthood was one of the
No matter what happened in the episode, by the last 5 minutes, you're like, I don't know why I'm crying at this, but here I am.
That's how I was with This Is Us.
I liked This Is Us. It was
Without Parenthood, I don't think there would have been a This Is Us.
I agree.
Gotcha. 100%.
Okay. So kind of laid the groundwork for it.
I think Craig T. Nelson on Parenthood.
Yeah.
Cool. So. Next question. Least favorite kids show or movie? One that your kids just watched a million times and you're just like, oh my gosh.
Man, what's that, Diego?
Dora the Explorer?
Yeah.
Bro. I couldn't. I could just hear it in the background. I'm like, we're out. I hated it. Did not like it. Did not like that.
It's normally those shows that whenever I'm like, I think I'm going to play some Sudoku until this is over.
Yeah, no. Yeah, it was like Diego was like a running mate or something.
Yeah, it was like the little monkey.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Nope. Don't like that one.
What's your favorite kids' toy? Like whenever your sons play with it, you also enjoy playing with it as well. It can be an activity also.
Yeah, so we created a game in our bonus room, all the houses that we've had.
Yes.
That is called Kneeball.
Okay.
So we're on our knees and then you tape with painter's tape on either side, and you can take Kneeball? Yeah, Kneeball. And they changed the name. It's called Rug Burns because your knee all rug burns, right? And so they call it Rug Burn. And so you have a little squishy ball, and then you play dodgeball. It's handball. So you throw it, but you can only move three steps on your knees.
Okay.
And then you have to throw it, so you play goalie, and so that's the most fun game that we play. It's boys.
That's awesome. Yeah, that's awesome.
You know, it's 2v2, and I get the little one, and the other two are playing against us. That's how it works. Awesome. Yeah, so rug burns. Yeah.
All right, next question. What moment of your kid's life are you most excited to be a part of?
Yeah, so Jen and I made this deal with them, is that when they turned 13, I will take you anywhere in America. And then between 18 and 22, while they're in college, we'll take them anywhere in the world. So my oldest, that we're going to take this through, he turned 13 during COVID. So we went this last year when he was 15, and he chose, we rented a van and did 7 days in Yellowstone.
Just me and him.
So just me and him. And for the 6 months prior to that, there's a great book out there that you guys should even put up, and it's called The Intentional Father.
Yeah. I've read through it.
Oh yeah. So good. So I did that book and wrote an entire thing for him, and we went through it on the ride.
That's cool.
Answered all those questions and stuff like that. Yeah. And so those trips, that's what I'm looking forward to, is my time with them and then wherever they choose. Because this is their trip and I'm just kind of organizing it and just seeing what they want to see. So those three trips with them, in America and then wherever they want to go. And the only person they are allowed to take on the overseas trip is their brothers. But if they want to go by themselves and just mom and me and Caleb, we'll do that.
Oh, man.
So, that's cool.
I just realized the complete untapped conversational potential of male initiation rites.
Yes. Yes.
You have three boys, and they're all entering into that.
Yes,
so they
are. We've had some of the conversations him and I had on that trip I'll never forget.
Yeah.
Just around how to treat a woman and what he thinks about life and business. And it was...
But even the discussion of male initiation rites basically is something that our parents never had. Yep. It was basically, did you go to war? Cool, you're a man.
Yep.
Or you're not.
Yeah, this is, we're like the, kind of the one of the only cultures that does that in America is the Latter-day Saints. It's like they kind of, they go through that. They have like some sort of like coming into manhood thing. But like it really doesn't exist here.
It doesn't.
You know?
Nope.
And so I think that there's a lot of good resources out there. Mm-hmm. And I think that that is something so in the world that we're running into, which is a crazy one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I would say it's a very important part of all dads.
Off episode, we'll talk for another 3 hours about male initiation because they are fascinating. And I only realized they existed like 2 or 3 years ago or made that realization of like, Devin, when did you become a man? Oh, wasn't when I graduated high school. Wasn't when I graduated college. It wasn't really when I got, oh God, am I? Ooh.
am I a man?
Am I self-realized? No, I'm not. Okay, got it.
It's fair.
No, well, here's the opportunity. Do you want to promote yourself? Like, if we want to follow you, do we want to, like, what's your Instagram handle? Anything like that? Nah. You're just you, you know?
Nah. I'm good. I mean, I enjoyed the, you know, obviously the time and stuff like that. Yeah. I think that, you know, for us, you know, no, I'm good. I think that as long as I got to share and that's it, you can throw some stuff up if you want, but I have no.
Cool.
Yeah. Yeah. No, this was fun.
Perfect. Yes.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for your time. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, for sure.
Appreciate you.
Yep. Thanks, guys.
Thanks again for listening. Make sure to follow us on Instagram at The Nashville Dads and to subscribe to us on Apple and Spotify podcast. We record at New Light Podcast Studio and episodes are produced by me, Devin.